Hey, you're listening to Cut for Time, a podcast from Faith Church located on the north side of Indianapolis. My name is Claire Kingsley. Each week, I'll sit down with one of our preaching pastors to discuss their Sunday sermon. Cut for Time is a look behind the scenes of sermon preparation, and they'll share with us a few things that we didn't hear from the sermon on Sunday. Thanks for listening.
This is going to be fun. For the listener at home, they don't realize that we're both in public places. Like, I'm at a coffee shop, you're at the Y. You're at the Y so that your kids would be engaged and have stuff to do. And then both of them are like, no, we just want mom.
Yes.
So you got one on the lap and the other one hungry and wanting food.
It's okay. I mean, they just, at least they get to see Joey. That's fun.
Yeah.
They like that. Okay, well, here we go.
Should we do this?
Our best shot. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okay. So Joey, I'm not going to ask you to give us a recap on Acts because you did that in your sermon. Mm-hmm. And so why don't we just give a recap from your sermon on Sunday and then we'll jump into a few questions.
Mm-hmm. So we are, this last Sunday, we were up to what some people have called the hinge verses in the book of Acts because it's the hinge between the first half of the book or the first third and the second two thirds, like the two parts, right? Hinges are boring. I mean, nobody looks at hinges, they look at doors. So I thought about making that joke in the sermon, but it was fine. It was a couple of not monumental verses, except they really shift the focus from the first part, which was all about Peter in Jerusalem, to the second part, which is about Paul or Saul and moving out from Antioch. And we're now getting into Paul's missionary travels. What we're really going to see is in the rest of Acts, there's basically two big divisions. One is how the gospel proceeds through Paul's ministry, and then how the gospel proceeds through Paul's imprisonment. And those are kind of the two main storylines that we're going to follow for the rest of the book of Acts in the next year and a half, however long it's going to take us. So basically what we looked at this time was, hey, Antioch as a city, why is this the kind of place where straight up Gentiles are coming to faith in Jesus? And how did this church, by the prompting of the Spirit, end up being the first church to ever think of the idea of full-time missionaries and then sending Barnabas and Saul out on this mission? Mm-hmm. And then the kind of takeaway question for us was, okay, here we've got people who are living a lifestyle of walking with Jesus. They're gossiping the gospel along the way, wherever they are, just telling people about life that they've found in Jesus. And it ends up being the people kind of living that lifestyle and some of the leaders who are teaching and living that lifestyle who are the ones that are called to then go as missionaries. So what kind of lifestyle are we leading? Are we willing to be called? Are we willing to go, even if it's not going, you know, in missions, but it's going into the coffee shops and the YMCAs and the wherever we are with the ability to just gossip the gospel?
Sure. Okay, so that leads me to my question I was going to ask you, which is, you know, you asked us, prompted at the end of your sermon, what kind of lifestyle am I living so that I can go when I'm called or have conversation when prompted. So when you say lifestyle, what's that actually mean practically, so that maybe people can kind of do a little analysis or reflection of like, okay, am I doing that lifestyle that Joey's talking about? Or maybe I should try something new or add, not that we're wanting people to add things to their to-do list, but maybe a new routine or a new idea or a new way of thinking. What is that lifestyle?
Yeah, that's a great question. So there's a proactive and a reactive side to this. And we have to start with the reactive side in order to build an understanding. And the reactive side is basically the question of what do I want to be able to respond to the world and do? So in other words, an opportunity comes up in which it's like, oh, I could talk about who Jesus is right now, this opportunity. Like, it's just right there. Am I ready or do I want to be ready to naturally, conversationally, and one guy uses the phrase gospel fluent. Like, do I want to be able to just fluently speak the gospel in all conversations in life? And if that's true, if that's what I want to be able to do, what kind of a lifestyle of building those skills do I need to live? So you can think in terms of analogies. You know, I talked about my grandpa and his handshake, right? His goal wasn't to have a strong handshake at the end of his life. His goal was to be useful on the farm And so the lifestyle that he lived was a lifestyle of building usefulness, being able to respond to, the need to get up at five and milk the cows, or the need to move heavy animals just by leaning on them, or to throw heavy objects, to move heavy things. And so his whole lifestyle was built on doing that in order to be able to do it better and more efficiently. You could think about the same thing in anybody who does like a workout regimen or an exercise regimen. It's like, what do you want to be able to do? And so what you want to be able to do informs the kind of training that you you incorporate. If you want to be able to run fast, you do specific kind of training. If you want to be able to play with your kids without getting winded, you may do a different kind of training. If you just want to be useful in the world, to be able to respond to emergencies that require physical strength, you would do yet another kind of training. So the first question is, what do I want to be able to respond and do? And if it's just speak the gospel fluently in all situations in life, then the lifestyle that leads to that is a lifestyle of the basics, reading scripture, prayer, but it's also proactively putting ourselves in situations where we're required to do that, building relationships with people who don't know Jesus so that we're called on to speak the gospel fluently. It's the lifestyle of trying to think through and understand, okay, how am I lost? What am I looking for? How are my friends lost? What are they looking for? How does the gospel answer those needs and questions? And it's the lifestyle of really deeply perceiving other people, who they are, what motivates them, what they're looking for in life, and thinking deeply about, or at least thinking hard about, how does the gospel really address and answer that question? Everybody has, kind of unique things that they're bringing to their quest to be human in this world, and the stuff that they're looking for and longing for, and how does the gospel answer each of those needs, differently? So it's a lifestyle that involves being with people, learning from people, talking to people, trying to understand people, and also being with God, learning from God, trying to understand what God is offering in Jesus, and then figuring out how those two come together in natural conversational language.
Okay, can I add something also to lifestyle? I think that we, in order to be able to be effective ministers of the gospel, we need to have margin. So
yes.
We might be able to create the perfect plan of I go to this program weekly so that I can share the gospel, or I meet with this friend weekly so that I can share the gospel. And then there's, I think, also need to not overschedule or overplan, and just be able to have that margin in your life. So when those random times come up, you are able, like you said, there's that reactive, that ability to react in a certain way, in a way that's loving. And I also think it's not just building time for others, but the margin that you give yourself also of not maxing yourself out, it builds capacity. It frees up capacity in your life to be able to then share, right? Are not maxed out. Yep. So that time, it's not just the physical act of freeing up time, but it's freeing up capacity as well. So that you are more loving. Can we really say we are so loving when we are rushed or maxed out, or we can do our best, but it's hard. We've all felt that feeling. But how much more loving can we be towards others when we do have a little bit of space in our lives?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I think that's part of okay, what's my goal? If I want to be able to respond with the gospel, then I need to have space in my life to be able to respond. If we're scheduled every minute of every day, there is no time to respond. This kind of hit me last Saturday. My daughter had soccer practice, and I'm sitting at a picnic table with someone I've never met. She's a mom of one of the kids. She's sitting there with some paperwork. I'm sitting there with some sermon prep stuff. And it's like, well, gosh, if I don't read this book right now, or this part of this book right now, I'm not going to have it read before I need to incorporate it into tomorrow's sermon, right? No margin meant an opportunity there to just engage a person and to see them as a person instead of just a potential time suck. Just wasn't there. So you're absolutely right. Now, if my goal is not to be able to respond to the needs of the people around me, and my goal is to be able to be, I don't know, hyper productive or utilizing every minute for revenue generation or something like that, then we're going to have a very different lifestyle. But if the goal is to be the kind of person who can respond with the gospel, then we have to build a life that allows for response time.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Okay, well, Joey, is there anything that we had to cut from your sermon on Sunday that you wish you could have included?
Yeah, well, it was a communion Sunday. And so on communion Sundays, of course, we're spending time taking communion together. So the sermon's naturally shorter. So one thing I would have included if I'd had a little bit more time was a discussion about kind of the default assumption in our world right now is that beliefs are inherently private things and individual things, and that it is wrong for me to believe that what I believe is right and what you believe is wrong, and therefore I should share with you what I believe so that you will come to believe what I believe. It's just sort of assumed to be arrogant or imperialistic or paternalistic or those sort of things for me to say, hey, I believe this and I wish you did too. The interesting thing about, of course, that particular belief that it's wrong to share your beliefs with the hope that someone else will come to share those beliefs is that everybody who believes that is trying to convince everyone else that their belief about beliefs is correct and that everyone else should come to believe their belief about beliefs. And so it's kind of a self-defeating perspective to say, like, it's wrong for me to share my beliefs in the hopes that you'll come to believe it. And I need to convince you to believe that it's wrong to share your beliefs with the hopes that someone would come to believe it. And I need you to agree with me and come to agree with my belief. So it's just one of those ironies that's kind of built into our idea of tolerance or the assumption of tolerance in the world today that is, in fact, not very tolerant. It's better to be willing to discuss what's different rather than to assume, oh man, you know, hey, I believe this and it's good for me and it's right for me and it's true for me, but I can't say it's true for you and et cetera. So yeah. I would have probably developed that more and shared it as part of the sermon.
Okay. Well, let's develop that here if you don't mind, because I had an interaction yesterday with a Muslim, and he was a technician coming to our house to help repair an appliance. And I offered to make him lunch, and he told me no fasting, and it prompted the conversation about Ramadan, and I knew Ramadan was ending, and so I asked him more about his feast day tomorrow, which is today, I guess, and how they celebrate, and he takes off work, and he shared about his daughters and how they've taught them to fast and what it means, why they do it, and it's he just was really open about his faith, and I asked questions and allowed him to speak, but then there came this point where I'm like, okay, I have a completely different perspective on faith and God, and I'm like, it feels wrong to share right now, because even though we were talking about faith and you're both very comfortable, it felt wrong to be like, well, I shouldn't probably, because I don't want to offend him, but even though he just shared, and I have Christian things hanging all around my house, it's no secret. Mm-hmm. So why I feel that way, what should I have done differently?
Interesting.
And I don't know. You want to coach me a little bit here? I'm sure other people have had experience like this. Basically, I'll say it left with me telling him, enjoy your feast day tomorrow. Enjoy your day off, you know?
Right. Right. Well, I doubt you did anything wrong in the conversation. If he left your home, you know, somewhat aware that, like, by what's hanging around your house, at least, that, like, oh, this is a Christian family, and she was very interested, engaged, respectful, and curious about what I believe. Mm-hmm. Like, that's great. That's positive for sure. It doesn't sound like he ever, like, turned and asked you, like, so what do you think about fasting, or what do you think about this about Muslims, or anything like that. And so there wasn't a sort of natural curiosity meets curiosity moment, right, in which you could have said, oh, we actually think this or believe that or whatever. I'm curious, what did he talk about what fasting means in the Muslim tradition, or anything along those lines?
He shared with me how he shares about fasting for his children. He has three girls. and they're all elementary school age. And so he just shared, they fast because they hope that God will hear their prayer to heal their grandma. Grandma's sick. And so we will fast in order to like earn favor so God hears us and maybe answers that prayer. And I wanted to just be like, oh, well, my God will hear my prayer regardless. You know, like nothing I can do would change him responding and hearing me, responding to me and stuff like that.
Oh, man. Yeah. And I think there's probably some folks maybe like, because I know you and I aren't the like natural evangelist types, but there's some folks who somehow would have been able to, in a really just winsome way, have been able to say that in a gentle way and all that.
Yeah.
So I wonder what would have happened if you'd asked something along the lines of like, so connecting about, connecting on the parenting level of trying to teach your kids religious tradition.
Yeah.
So how do your girls respond to that, and how well do they understand it? And, you know, do they like want to fast harder and hope that Allah hears even more, and maybe transition into, you know, my husband and I, we're not Muslim, we're Christians. And so we have a different understanding of fasting, but we're also trying to help our kids understand it. And I don't know if that's the way that you kind of then say, like, you know, for us, fasting isn't about trying to get God to hear us. It's about how God has already heard us. And so we're fasting as a way of identifying with Jesus, the fact that our God suffered for us, instead of that we're trying to earn something from him. And so fasting is a way of identifying with him and then setting aside our resources so they can be used to bless others who don't have as much. I don't know, it's tough to do any of that. It's way easier to like armchair quarterback this thing after the fact than in the moment when you're like, I want to be respectful and I also don't, and what about this? And yet this is exactly the lifestyle thing that we were talking about earlier of, okay, you had an interaction, wanted to be able to respond and speak the gospel fluently, felt like, I don't know the words, I don't know this language. And so we talk about it afterwards and think about, well, what about this? What about that? And next time, it's like, oh, next time you might have the words to be able to speak the gospel a little more fluently in that kind of an interaction.
That's the hope.
Just so everyone's clear who's listening, I don't think I would have done any better or any different in the situation than you would have. Like, there's a Jehovah's Witness team that keeps coming to our house because I engaged in conversation with them the first time. And I am so like, oh, guys, I'm trying to mow the lawn. Like, leave me alone. I got work to do, and none of that margin and stuff. And I just don't even know how to start engaging with people. Like, you're a pastor, you care about the kingdom of God. I'm like, we mean such different things. So I got a lot of learning to do in this area too.
Yeah. And something that's encouraging from our eShift program, and this is just like all on my mind in this conversation, is that not every single interaction needs to end in sharing in a gospel presentation, right?
Yeah.
There is a part that is very valuable, that before that can even happen, people need to have a positive interaction with Christians. They need to have a positive interaction with church.
Yep.
They need to build this trust with people and relationships over time, long time, truly. Like, instant conversion is really rare these days. So, you know, if anything else, I gave him a positive interaction with Christian, hopefully. And
absolutely. When missiologists, people who study missions and evangelism and conversion and all that, when they talk about conversion, especially from a faith like Islam to Christianity, like one of the biggest issues is, can the other person see a Christian as someone more or less just like them, with the same questions and the same concerns and the same issues and the same struggles and the same kind of life experience, and yet with a different faith? And it makes that faith then become plausible to be believed, instead of just, well, I mean, Christians are just so different than me, I could never, you know, I could never that. It's like, oh no, actually, they're a lot, I mean, we're just like everybody else. and yet we believe in a different direction. And it makes that belief plausible if the human connection is more like, yeah, we're human. We're both human. We're pretty much the same in all of our struggles and issues and concerns and cares.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And that's why I love that you pointed out the common ground of parenting, because if you can find one thread really to connect even, that's just a great start. So yeah. Okay, well, I learned from you, and you know, I did the eShift program, and here we are still feeling like one step forward, two steps back, but
lifestyle.
I did build margin by telling you I wasn't going to be at Lead Team, and so I
that's right, that's right.
But by that saying, meant I'm going to pop out on work.
I'm going to join this meeting remotely.
Yeah.
So, hey,
so
worth it.
My margin.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right. Well, you're juggling two children on your lap right now and trying to record a podcast. And so margin isn't a thing we're experiencing at the moment. So I think we got enough. We got enough in the can.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I'll look forward to being back next week after we jump into Saul and Barnabas's, that's not fun to say, Barnabas and Saul's first missionary journey.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Cut for Time. If you wish to submit questions to our pastors following their sermon, you can email them to podcast@faithliveitout.org or text them into our Faith Church texting number, and we'll do our best to cover it in the week's episode. If this conversation blessed you in any way, we encourage you to share it with others. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week.